from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Shabbat Zachor. As you may have heard on prior podcasts, it is possible to present a podcast in honor of someone. You can do this if you wish. The cost is very reasonable, it's tax deductible, and it is a terrific way to honor somebody or somebody's memory who is close to you. You can start the process and learn all the details by contacting Pardes via info@pardes.org. Thanks very much. This week, Shabbat Zachor with Rabbi Dr. Daniel Roth. Rabbi Roth is a member of the Pardes faculty and is also the director of the Pardes Center for Judaism and Conflict Resolution. And now, Rabbi Dr. Daniel Roth.
This coming Shabbat, Parshat Tetzaveh, is also known as Shabbat Zachor, the Shabbat we remember what Amalek did to us. It is a biblical obligation for everyone, men, women, and children, to come and hear the passages from the Torah, from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 25, verses 17, 19, that read about the core attack and obligation to remember Amalek. As it states, remember what Amalek did to you on your journey after you left Egypt. How undeterred by fear of God, he surprised you on the march when you were famished and weary, and cut down all the stragglers in your rear. Therefore, when the Lord your God grants you safety from all your enemies around you, in the land that the Lord your God is giving you as a hereditary portion, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. Timche et zecher Amalek mitachat ha-shamayim lo tishkach. Maimonides, in his Laws of Kings, Hilchot Malachim, explains that this obligation of wiping out the descendants of Amalek is one of the three mitzvot commandments that the Israelites are commanded to do upon entering the promised land. Maimonides goes on to explain later in the Laws of Kings, that's the very beginning of the Laws of Kings, later in the Laws of Kings, chapter 5, halakha number 5, that he writes that it is a positive commandment to destroy the memory of Amalek. As it states in Deuteronomy, obliterate the memory of Amalek. It is also a positive commandment to constantly remember their evil deeds. And he continues to say that the oral tradition teaches that remember is by word of mouth. By word of mouth, your mouths do not forget in your hearts, for it is forbidden to forget his hatred and enmity. And further on, in the Laws of Kings, chapter 6, halakha number 4, he writes, if either the seven nations or Amalek refuse to accept a peaceful settlement, not one soul of them may be left alive. Do not do this to all the cities that are not the cities of these nations. However, from the cities of these nations, do not leave a soul alive. Similarly, in regard to Amalek, as it states in Deuteronomy, chapter 25, verse 19, states, obliterate the memory of Amalek. Amalek, in other words, is the ultimate Jewish textual gun that can be used as a call for holy war to destroy enemies. The question, first question that I want to relate to, though, is who is Amalek? Who can this textual gun be turned towards? And the answer to that question has shifted over history. Initially, Amalek, according to Bereshit, according to Genesis chapter 36, verse 12, Amalek is actually a member of the Abrahamic family. His mother was Timnah, who becomes a concubine of Esau's son Eliphaz. So he's basically the great-grandchild of Abraham, on the one hand. And his mother, Timnah, as we will see, is understood to have been a princess not from the Abrahamic family. So initially it starts off as a conflict within the Abrahamic family. But later generations understand that Amalek takes the shape of different arch enemies of the Jewish people. We'll be reading next week after Shabbat, the story of Megillat Esther, the Purim story, where Haman is often identified, of course, as being a descendant of Amalek. Later rabbis understood that Romans were descendants of Amalek. Many, many years later, Jews in the Holocaust and post-Holocaust understood that the Nazis and Hitler was absolutely Amalek. Rav Soloveitchik, great 20th century Talmudic and philosopher in America, identified once Stalin and the Soviet Union as being Amalek. More recently, you will hear a certain rhetoric of people referring to some of the leaders of Iran, like Ahmadinejad, as Amalek. And of course, the tragic story from 1995 of Baruch Goldstein killing 26 Muslims in the Cave of the Patriarchs on the day of Purim, describing it, understanding them to be Amalek. This textual weapon, however, was not only used by Jews, it was also used by Christians. The Christians of the Crusades understood often that Muslims were Amalek. Martin Luther understood that the Jews were Amalek. Later, the Puritans, as they fought against Native Americans, understood that those quote-unquote savages that they were fighting against were Amalek, and they were engaged in a holy war against them. And to this day, it is used in different ways. You'll even find, on occasion, the ultra-Orthodox referring to secular Jews as a form of Amalek that is coming to destroy their identity, if not their physical being. So this is a major challenge in my mind, perhaps the most significant challenge within Jewish texts, of encouraging holy war, encouraging potential call for violence. And the question that I want to raise here is, what would it mean to transform that relationship with Amalek? What would it mean to try to actually entertain the possibility of reconciling with this arch enemy, whoever they might be? And I want to suggest that the way towards reconciling with our ultimate other, our ultimate enemy, begins with our ability to understand their story. How are they perceiving and interpreting their reality and their hatred towards us? And what's amazing to me is that there are several examples of how our commentaries were not afraid to go into the head of Amalek and ask, what's your story? Why do they hate us? Why are we in such an internal conflict with them? And I want to bring here a few examples of what does it mean to get into the story of Amalek. Before I bring some of those, however, I want to bring perhaps the most classic and well-known interpretation, and that's from the Midrash, the Mechilta, the early rabbinic commentary on the book of Exodus, where it also describes Amalek, where it mentions here that then came Amalek, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Eliezer, Chisma say, for the enemy comes only because of sin and transgression. Meaning, why is Amalek coming? It's not because they have a particular story. They're coming because we have sinned. We've done something inappropriate. Later, the Midrash goes on to say that then came Amalek, because Amalek would come in under the very wings of the cloud and steal people of Israel and kill them, as it is said, how he met thee by the way, and he feared not God, which could be understood that Amalekites did not fear God. But others say, according to the Midrash, and he feared not God refers to Israel, who had no meritorious deeds. They did not have mitzvot in their hand. Meaning, these Midrashim are portraying Amalek as just simply pure evil, but it comes when we are not acting appropriately. And this is a classic rabbinic interpretation of why bad things are happening, to say it's actually in our hands, that the solution is not about making peace with this enemy or trying to understand them. The solution is actually trying to fear God more, keep the commandments, and understand what we're supposed to be doing. And then, subsequently, the external enemies will be taken care of. But that, while it's a dominant narrative, doesn't really attempt to get into the narrative, the story of Amalek. I want to offer a few examples, though, of classic rabbinic interpretation that do that. The first can be found in the Babylonian Talmud, Sanhedrin 99b, which traces the roots of the conflict to Amalek's personal upbringing. And it says as follows, "What is the purpose of writing, and Lotan's sister was Timnah?" That Timnah, who was Amalek's mother, was the sister of Lotan. And the Gemara continues, "Timnah was a royal princess, as it is written, Aluf, or the Duke Lotan, Aluf, Timnah, and by Aluf, an uncrowned ruler is meant. Desiring to become a proselyte, she went," meaning Timnah went to Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov, "but they did not accept her. So she went and became a concubine to Eliphaz, the son of Esau, saying, I'd rather be a servant to this people than a mistress of another nation. From her, Amalek was descended, who afflicted Israel." Why so? Because they should not have repulsed her. This is an incredible Gemara that's really, really pushing to understand Amalek and understanding what his story is. Because what it's saying is that his mother comes from royalty, comes from a well-off situation, and nevertheless, she wanted to join the Abrahamic family because she believed in it. So she left her home, she tries to bring, to become part of them, but she's rejected. Her conversion, her identity are pushed aside. And as a result, she finds the only way that she could somehow cling to the Abrahamic family, and that was to become the concubine of Abraham's grandson, great-grandson, Eliphaz. So she's not even the regular wife of Eliphaz, she's the concubine, and that's the context that Amalek is born into. And again, the Gemara says, why is he coming to afflict Israel? Because they should not have repulsed her. In other words, Amalek's personal narrative, according to this Gemara, is that he grows up, he's born into a situation that he could have had a better life, but he has been rejected because of his mother being rejected, and therefore he hates the family of Abraham for him being born into this second or third class citizen or non-citizen of the Abrahamic tribe. And therefore, he's born with a victim narrative. This reminds me often of people who try to, a first generation might immigrate to Europe or to America from a third world country, and they try and work hard, and whatever it is, it doesn't work out, and then their children often become radicalized against that country that they've immigrated to, out of frustration of not having been feeling that they've been fully invited in and assimilated into the larger culture. So that's one victim narrative that the Talmud is not afraid to go. Another states, and this is a later tradition, a medieval tradition from the Balei HaTosfot, the 12th century in France, brought in their commentary Hadar Zkenim, traces the roots of the conflict even earlier than Esau being born. It traces it back to his grandfather, Esau. And it says the following, "Esau made his son Eliphaz take an oath that he would kill Jacob and thus regain the birthright which Jacob had acquired through guile." Meaning Esau was frustrated, angry, hurt that Jacob had tricked him out of his birthright, and therefore he is trying to get his son to avenge this situation. But Timnah, now I'm continuing to read, "Timnah, the wife of Eliphaz, however, dissuaded him from attempting to take Jacob's life, pointing out to him the danger involved in measuring his strength against that of a hero like Jacob. Eliphaz followed his wife's advice and had to content himself with taking away Jacob's possessions without attempting his life. Esau, disappointed in his son, adjured his grandson, Amalek, to kill Jacob. But he too was persuaded by his mother, Timnah, to let Jacob alone, pointing out to him that the descendants of Abraham were destined to serve the Egyptians, and the killing of Jacob would transfer the servitude upon Esau's children. As long as Israel was in Egypt, Amalek held his peace. But no sooner had the Israelites completed their term of servitude and left Egypt, than they were attacked by Amalek." In other words, this conflict between Amalek and the Israelites goes back several hundred years before their first attack. as the Jews, as the Israelites come out of Egypt, it goes back all the way to the pain of their grandfather, of Esau, who is holding on to this grudge of Jacob, the forefather of the Israelites, having taken through trickery his birthright. And in what this Midrash is basically saying is that for several hundred years, the Amalekite tribe is passing from generation to generation. Remember what the Israelites did to your grandfather when he was hungry and thirsty and on the verge of death. Don't forget. And when you have the opportunity, wipe them out. So they had their own remember what the Israelites did. As a result, they tried to kill us. And that's what sets into motion our obligation to remember what they did to us in order that we one day destroy them. And again, I see here an attempt by these rabbis, these medieval rabbis, in constructing a little bit of their story, that they had a pain story that they're telling from generation to generation, which is in a strange way kind of mirroring our story of remembering our pain and therefore destroying them. A third rabbinic interpretation into the narrative of Amalek can be found in Esther Rabbah. The Midrash on Esther, the book of Esther, has a really incredible creative writing license, like many Midrashim, but this one in particular gives a nice, long, very long speech into the mouth, if you will, of Haman, meaning it's like several pages of Haman's narrative, where he's writing a letter trying to persuade all the nations of the world of how dangerous these Israelites are and why they need to be destroyed. And he goes through all of the people that the Israelites have tricked and destroyed throughout the generations and why they need to be destroyed right now. And again, this is by the rabbis getting into the mind of Haman. And one of them is about what the Israelites did and why Amalek wanted to attack them. And the Midrash explains that Amalek, that where did he come from? It says Amalek then came to fight against Israel and Rephidim. Where did he come from? He came from consulting with Balaam. Balaam being the sorcerer who tries to destroy the Israelites with his curses. And he was known to be a consultant to the Egyptians. And they ask his advice, how can we destroy it? And he says, for he had gone to seek advice from him, saying, I know that you are a wise counselor and a master of evil designs, and that whoever seeks counsel from you does not come to grief. See, he went on, what the nation has done to the Egyptians after all the benefits they had conferred upon them. If they treated the Egyptians this way, who showed them so much kindness, what will they do to the other nations? What do you advise me to do? So Amalek says to Balaam, what do you want me to do? What can I do to possibly stop them before they come and destroy us? Because we know what their plan is. They just destroyed the number one nation in the world, the Egyptians. They're now going to come and destroy all of these inhabitants of the land, as they're saying, including Amalek. And therefore Amalek is saying, what should we do? And Balaam replied, go and make war on them. For you make war on the merit of their ancestor Abraham, and you also, being the descendant of Abraham, can participate in the merit of Abraham. And after he made war on them, he says to them, you're also the descendants of Abraham. Maybe you have merit to be able to destroy the Israelites before they go and destroy you when they come into the land of Canaan. So here you see an attempt of their fears, not of what has happened in the past, like the other two interpretations, but of what is going to happen in the immediate future, as the Israelites are declaring that they're coming in right away to the land of Canaan to destroy the nations. This interpretation, this idea, can also be found in the early Jewish historians' writings of Josephus, in his book Antiquities of the Jews, where he goes into great detail about how Amalek was the only one of the different nations to say, hey, these guys are getting more, this nation of Israelites are becoming more and more strong. We better go out and fight with them now while they're still a bunch of slaves before they become a mighty, powerful or superpower in the region and come and destroy us. So in other words, Amalek, their narrative is that they want to destroy the Israelites before the Israelites destroy them. And that's why the Israelites end up wanting to destroy them, because they tried to destroy the Israelites. Very, very complicated. So in sum, okay, this story of Amalek that we are commanded to remember, not to forget, and to destroy is really an incredible, important case study of conflict with our text. Of text that it can encourage and be used, and has been used, of declaring holy war against an enemy. And the question is, how can we nevertheless try to understand what their victimhood is? What their story of why they're hating us? And I believe that is the only way to try and change an otherwise head-on conflict of two narratives arguing that the other one is the ultimate evil, the ultimate enemy, and we are the ultimate victim, and we have to remember and pass on from generation to generation to hate them. And how can we try to shift that? And I think the rabbis, while they of course talk about the importance of wiping out Amalek, we should recognize that who Amalek is has changed over generations, and that the rabbis were not afraid of trying to get into the story, trying to get into the mind, the narrative of Amalek. And I think that if we can try to do that with our enemies today, whether they be groups, political parties, nations, religions, or even our personal enemies, which I believe each of us will often amalekate the one who we see as being the exact opposite of us, being the one who has no values because we possess all the values. To the extent that we can begin to identify, why are we amalekating those others? How can we bring back their story and understand how they might be seeing things, how they might be seeing us? I think that is an important message that we should remember on the Shabbat Zachor, the Shabbat of remembering Amalek, of how we can perhaps tell a different story to our generations and to those generations to come. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Roth. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.